Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call the regular meeting for May 25th, 2005 of the Napomo Community Services District to order. Once again, we're celebrating our 40th year. And I would like you all to rise and join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Director Wilson. Director Trotter.
I'm here.
Director Lynn.
Here.
Here.
President
Mahaly. Here. At this time, I'd like to open our meeting up to public comment. Public comment is any item that is under the jurisdiction of the board, but not on today's agenda. And presentation time is limited to 3 minutes. Or shorter if you can make it, or if it's really important, I'll give you a little more time. So at this time, I'd like to open up to public comment for items not on the agenda. Dr. Burnsett.
Thank you. Brooks Burnsett. I reside in Cypress Ridge, which I don't think is in the district, but I have a business and a commercial building here in the district, right here on Wilson Street, actually. My comment is I have an 8-unit PUD project that building plans were approved March 21st. Public improvement plans are still in process. My comment is on the increase in fees, and which kind of surprised me, and I think some other people also. And I just... in my opinion, I think somehow there should have been a little more notification. Maybe the file was gleaned and people given opportunity that had intent to serve letters to come in and say a 60-day leeway there where those fees could be paid at the old fee, such as the South County road improvement fees were done. There was a time limit that you could come in and with the county and pay those fees. And so that, I mean, I could understand a 10-20% increase, but this is like 175% increase, 8 units approximately, with the landscaping meter. Also, you're talking $100,000, which is quite the shock to a budget on a fairly small project like that. So, thank you.
I have a question.
Any questions, comments of Dr. Burnsett? Mr. Eby?
You received an intent to serve letter, I assume?
I did.
And isn't there some verbiage in the intent to serve letter that says that that this is subject to any fees that might be increased during the between that time that the intent serve letter is given and the will serve letter is issued?
I am not sure. I haven't... my intent to serve letter was issued in June of 2004. I would have to look at that.
Okay, I guess the intent to serve letters that I've seen have a clause in there that say that this is subject to any fees that might be increased between now and sometime in the future. And so, to me, there's fair warning in there that this isn't the status at that point isn't the same financial status it could be later, and maybe if you went back and looked at your intent to serve letter, you might find that clause.
Yeah. The process is a little bit confusing as I have found, is when plans can be presented here in order to pay the fees. I have inquired, but was unsure exactly when that process could take place. So it is a little bit confusing, I would say. This is just a suggestion because I know that I'm sure you guys have been flooded with comments about the increase. So, any other questions?
Mr. Wayne, did you have a question, comment?
Mr. Eby spoke for me, too.
Any input from staff? Any response from staff on this? I know in June things were in flux, so.
I guess my only comment would be is that the board dictated a clear policy that all services, because of the nature of the groundwater basin and the protecting the groundwater basin, that all fees, all construction now would be required to buy into supplemental water.
Even though the ordinance has not taken effect until, I believe, July 1st, is that correct?
That's correct. They adopted a resolution related to that very clause that Mr. Eby stated in his will serve letter. And the will serve letter, based on the health and safety of the groundwater basin, articulated.
I can take it from there. It articulated that fees would be calculated and credited, is the legal term, but assessed, levied to a project at the later of two dates. And this was, a resolution that this board adopted on April 13th, and the later of two dates, and that is the date that the utility plans for the project are approved by the district, or the effective date of the new capacity charges, the later of those dates. And that was on April 13th. Effectively, and I've covered this in a memo to the board, what that said was that unless public improvement plans had been approved by this district prior to April 13th, the new fees would be applicable to the project. And there has been no flux about that since that date. We've held fast on that. I have fielded a number of questions, including I spoke with Dr. Brinsett on at least one or two occasions and explained the district's position on this.
But my point was that when he received his intent to serve letter,
correct,
there was also a notice in there that the fees could be higher than he thought they were at that time.
Intent to serve letters of that time included language that all applicable fees the district will apply. Something of that order. I have to pull up his specific intent to serve language. It has evolved, and of course, currently that intent to serve language is very clear, even to the point of saying the current fee is this, but the fees will be applied, as we've discussed, at the point that the district signs those or approves the development plans, utility plans specifically, or the new capacity charges are in effect, whichever is later. So again, we'll have new capacity charges, substantial change again, and it's on the order of 400% capacity charges that become effective July 1. We have, of course, a schedule then for those capacity charges to change over the next 4 years, and so then that will, if plans are approved in a year and a half from now, whichever the current capacity charge at that time would apply. So,
if plans are approved before the July 1st,
again, the ordinance that
resolution
the district adopted on April 13th wanted to we recognized that the incentive for folks to run in with development plans and say, well, we want to beat the fees. And what we did was we went back to say, the state of the groundwater basin, we made these findings as to the significance of the issue and the need to apply these new fees to construction that was in process. And so the board made that policy as to how those fees will apply and when they'd be credited, quote unquote, to a project. And that effectively means that unless the plans were approved before April 13th, then the new fees will apply.
And that's approved by the district.
Approved by the district.
Yeah.
So
I know that's clearly stated on the...
Yes. Yes, and that has been the clear policy statement that I've made to every developer that has called me on this question. And again, I've relayed that in a previous memo to the board as to how...
Perhaps the single point that might be made for Dr. Bernstedt is this, that since he had an intent to serve letter for almost a year, not quite a year, prior to April 13th. Had he realized that April 13th was a critical date, it's conceivable that he would have met his obligations in the intent to serve and paid his fees and gotten a will serve letter under the old fee scale. But our problem is, of course, if we announce it, everybody get your stuff in real quickly because we're going to change the rules on such a date. You get this wave of people who come rushing in, which doesn't help fund supplemental water, which is the water that Dr. Burns said and everybody else's project is going to need. So,
yeah. But then you would know who's truly intends to exercise their will serve letters also, because you've got some people, I'm sure, who just renew, but then that would be until they expire. I don't know what the expiration is on an intent to serve.
Actually, intent to serve letters, the intent to serve letter you received has a 2-year expiration date on it. Current intent to serve letters, that policy has evolved, and the current intent to serve letters have an 8-month expiration date on them unless a complete county application has been met, and then it's extended out to 2 years from the date of issue.
But can the public improvement plans utility be submitted before, can they be submitted here before the county has actually approved them at the county?
No, they have to be approved by the county first.
When the developer is ready to have a final approval by the board, enter into plan check, they can be submitted. The balance there is that if the plans are underdeveloped and not ready, then plan check will go on between the district's consulting engineer and the developer's engineer for some time and at some expense. That's all that expense being borne by the developer. So I think that helps balance that. I mean, developers, I could see that, but a developer is we had one set of plans come into us that were a sketch in an attempt to beat this fee, and those plans have not been approved. They've been back and forth now between engineers.
So you're saying they don't have to be approved by the county before you can approve them? See, that's what was confusing to me, because that's the process that was confusing, because I was told they had to be approved by the county. So I could have had them in here.
You have to have your...
I
don't know that
that's
they,
my argument.
Yeah.
I think that's a question for Jeff Carney.
Yeah, that would be something I'd ask the consulting engineer, is really the flow of plans and approval of plans as to whether simply the utility pages could be approved prior to counties. I'm not sure of county's construction plan approval in that process. So. But again, as of April 13th, your plans would have had to been approved, and I'm quite certain we did not have a conversation before that date as in regard to your plan or in regard to this process.
No, but that's what I'm saying. For notification, which would have been fair, I think, to people who had projects in the work that were viable projects that were moving along, and the process of when and what can be submitted, very possible, because this is not something that we just start working on. This has been going on for quite a while. So,
I just make one final comment. I certainly understand your concern, but the board has to balance. The board's position is that the groundwater basin can't support current consumption. You know, and that's what the Papadopoulos report that was forwarded to the county stated. So you need to balance so somebody comes in and builds, they're drawing, you know, from the reports that we've received, they're drawing water that is really unavailable. And the board has adopted a conjunctive use policy that we can use the groundwater basin to support growth, so that they can, but they need to buy into supplemental water. So when the water gets here, it will water the new development. So that's the policy. Okay. And so the question, and you know, so the fairness question is balanced between money and available resources. And I don't, and I can't tell you from a legal perspective, you know, how you balance, that's a policy issue.
Thank you.
Any other comments from Dr. Burnstead? Thank you very much, Dr. Burnstead. Any other public comment?
Yeah, good morning, President Rahilly, members of the board, staff, and council. My name is George Billinger. I reside at 445 Colonial Place, Black Lake Village. I'm a member of the Village Master Council and also represent the Council on Black Lake NCSD related matters. Also the resident audience of one at most of your meetings.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're welcome, Larry. Time constraints on the May 5th meeting at Black Lake Resort resulted in that the staff was not able to answer many questions from the audience pertaining to the rate increase. I was asked by the Council President David Weitzel to form an ad hoc committee to study the rate increase and to contact Black Lake residents who had unanswered questions. The small committee is comprised of Dave Weitzel, President of the Council, past President Bob McGill, two longtime Black Lake residents who are quite familiar with the history of the water service at Black Lake, and two representatives from the Black Lake Golf Resort. We met yesterday to review and discuss the many responses to my email of May 17th to a majority of the Black Lake residents in which I ask for submittal of questions, suggestions, and comments on the rate increase. The questions the committee received range from: how has the NCSD been operating so long without a rate increase? To our arrangements with the golf course for wastewater usage. Interest and sometimes disappointment and resentment is running pretty high within the village. A question of great concern to the committee is the very large sum of money Black Lake has contributed to the groundwater litigation, $332,000 since July 30th of 2004. Residents want to know how long this will continue, what was the reason, and what the future holds. I'm here this morning to ask the board's permission to contact the litigator in this ongoing suit and to get specific details for our residents, rather than take up valuable time at the June 8th meeting. We'd like to address this issue now in the company of perhaps other representatives from the board or staff. I appreciate your consideration on this matter. Just a process of getting more information in a rather short period of time. I don't think we're going to turn out en masse to your meeting on June 8th. We've already had a pretty representative meeting on the 5th. We will probably present a position letter to the board stating objections, conclusions, and maybe some solutions on our behalf. I'd like to get an indication from the board now as to the feeling on our contacting Mr. Markman.
Mr. Saints?
I think the general manager has the administrative ability to contact Mr. Markman. Everybody has to kind of understand that Mr. Markman doesn't come cheap, you know, and it would be the very expense that you'd be concerned about him.
I can say that. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
For God's sake.
But let me just respond real quickly this way. The groundwater litigation was not initiated by the district. That's number one. We were sued.
These are good questions that residents would like to know.
Okay, so I want, that's one thing that you can state. We spent years trying to escape the groundwater adjudication, but we were joined as a defendant. I can't remember the year, but it's about a year and a half into the litigation. And so we had no choice but to defend our position. You don't go through issues as big as groundwater adjudications by default, by not responding and not litigating. Otherwise, you may have a no water position at the end of it. So the district, from a legal perspective, is literally forced into defending. And I think any water purveyor has to take the same position. Cal Cities, us, rural, you're all in the same position. If you don't defend, you risk the chance of ending up with nothing. Groundwater adjudication by its very nature is multi-plaintiff. I think there's over 100 litigants. I'm sure that's a conservative number regarding this groundwater adjudication. Further, groundwater adjudication is driven by experts that are also very expensive, and it's driven by multiple court hearings. This isn't just like you go to one trial and you spill your guts and the judge ends up with a decision. I think that there's been at least four mini trials conducted so far, and I don't know how many, but multiples of that forced settlement conferences that have been issued by the judge. So I guess my only comment would be is, A, this litigation wasn't of the district's choosing. B is the district has no choice but to defend on the basis of all of its residents. And C is this is probably the most expensive type of litigation known to man. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Well, John, why don't you send me a letter stating just what you've stated so we'll have something for the record.
Any other comments?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Nguyen, you had your hand there first, please.
The only thing I would add, I certainly agree with legal counsel. The only thing I would add is that whenever it comes time for us to authorize people to approach legal counsel and get into conversations, then we start saying, do we breach attorney-client privilege, in which case all of your conversations become grist for the mill in the court. They have the right to get, you know, to start citing that and start questioning us on things that, frankly, need to be handled more carefully. What you can do, however, and this is a resource for everybody in Black Lake and everybody in the community, you can go to the Santa Clara Complex, which is a website, and all of that is public domain, and it's a mountain of reading material. But if you're looking for factual chronologies and positions, all of that is available there and can be downloaded if you've got the stomach for it. And it's all under that court case. So, you know, people that really want to find out more detail of that sort.
All right. I'll appreciate that. I'll contact you with more, getting more details.
Okay, Mr. Eby.
Regarding the rate structure and the fact that you said there wasn't enough time for the district to explain it to the group at Black Lake, there were approximately five workshops held, which had to taken place over at least 12 hours of time here that the public didn't attend. The results of those workshops are in hard copy. It can be downloaded from the NCSD website, and if you don't have a downloading capability, they can be purchased from the front desk. And if after going over those, the residents still don't understand the rate structure as it's described in those documents, I'll be willing to volunteer my time to explain my understanding of what the consultant came up with. I think I understand them pretty well, so if there's any difficulty in understanding the conclusions he reached and that we agreed with, I'll volunteer my own time if you want to get a group together and discuss those documents.
Ed, thank you for your offer. I've given this information to the residents of Black Lake repeatedly about going to the to your very fine website. A lot of them have. You have to realize the population at Black Lake is consumed with golfing and barbecues. And we had a very fine sampling from the interested and concerned residents. I think the rate issue is pretty well digested at this point. It was this huge sum that stuck in the committee's craw. And without further ado, I'll contact Mr. Councilman Sykes and maybe draft a quick recap of what he told me now, or I'll contact Michael Wynn about the other information.
Mr. Trotter.
I am quite involved in this issue with George. George is to be commended for putting up with this foolishness from the Black Lake people. And it's probably not fair to characterize it as foolishness, but the board's and the consultants' presentations and all the written material that's been disseminated is excellent. I can't imagine it being any better. Now, some of the people with questions from what George has received have come into this thing quite late. And they had some opportunities to participate in this, and they allowed it to go by. And it's put George in a very awkward spot. It also puts the board in an awkward spot, because the board has met all its legal obligations, went beyond those obligations with this presentation out there, which was attended by 70 people from Black Lake. Should have been attended by quite a few more, in my judgment. So anything the staff can do to help George would be a great benefit. I've worked with George. I give him, just as Ed's volunteered, I've given him my version of what's happened here. I think John and Michael are fully capable of explaining this, the lawsuit and whatever else comes up. So getting Markman involved would seem too expensive and unnecessary.
Yeah, I don't feel it would be in the best interest of the district as a whole. Myself, and in emailing with Mr. LeBrun, we feel that a small one-on-one, face-to-face type meeting where we can go over these and give documentation or explanations, especially to the cost that Black Lake has contributed to the groundwater litigation. That number quoted is not.
I realize this is a big burden on the board.
It's not an accurate number, because they only pay a portion. The town division pays a portion. But anyway, regardless of that, I believe it is planned or thought that staff and one or two board members would meet with this group and at a date and time to be determined and go over the items that are of concern.
Larry, one other thing.
Mr. Trotter.
I have harassed, and that's a proper term, both Lisa and Michael to an great extent, trying to help George and help the Black Lake group, far beyond my responsibilities, as George has done. He's put a great deal of time and work in this thing. And I want to commend Lisa and Michael for their tolerance and help.
Thank you for hearing me this morning, and we'll address the options you gave us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, George. Any other public comment? Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for the consent agenda. Anybody with any corrections, comments, and whatnot? The only comment I had was on D3, which was the landscape maintenance district. If you look on, didn't find any misspellings in the minutes or anything like that. They just clean as a whistle. If you go to the landscape district item number D3, if you go to page 4 of that, there should be some corrections made. On that table right there, on the fiscal year 2005-2006 district budget, down at the bottom, cost per parcel is $362.03. If you take the total cost of $10,305 and divide that by the 28 parcels, it really comes up to $368.04. It was the only correction. So that's outside of that. That was it. You know, what else do you have to do at 1:30 in the morning? You know, I mean, sit there with your calculator and add up numbers. I'm almost getting to your level of sleep now, Mike, about 4 hours a night. So, do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Wynn, second by Mr. Trotter. And is there any public comment on the consent agenda before we vote?
Let it ride.
Seeing no public comment, Madam Secretary, would you call for the vote, please?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Administrative items. E1 is a service request. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. Before we commence E1, I just want to cover the additional items that the directors have in front of them and make sure we understand the placement of those items. We have two additional items. One was dropped off by Director Wynn, and one is a copy that was provided to me by Director Eby, and these are both for discussion under item E3. These are single-page copies in front of you. We have a letter from a customer dated May 20th, 2005, and that will be discussed under item F, the manager's report. And finally, we have a number of items that will be discussed on closed session. One I want to bring to your attention is we received a fax correspondence from Maria Vista Estates, and that was a 12-page fax, and that was copied to the board, I believe in your package, or was it in the mailbox, so some had picked it up before the meeting. In addition to that, we received the same 12 pages yesterday directly from Maria Vista with an additional, with some added items, and so we've made sure that the directors received those added items, and that's basically a copy of our November 28, 2001 agenda and some supporting materials. And finally, there's a cover memorandum on draft settlement language that has been forwarded by our special counsel on the water rights case, and that came as of May 23rd, so that was new information, and we'll discuss that in closed session. Then on to item E1, and this is a request for water and sewer service to a development that's planned at 160 and 170 San Antonio Lane, that's better known as that area behind McDonald's and Chevron. Adjacent to Highway 101 off of Teff Street. Again, the district originally received or received this application back in February, original application back in February, and first heard this item on April 13th. At that time, the directors directed staff to bring this back following the County Board of Supervisors' consideration of resource management system and a review of our own allocation system by the directors. And of course, both those items have since been considered by the board. At the original application, the applicant had proposed 32 units of multifamily residential. Upon their, well, actually there was not a reapplication, but a revision to the original application, and that revision includes a senior housing option, and that's a 46 unit option. Applicant and I had a discussion on this and what the water allocation should be for the senior housing versus the multifamily housing option, and I have a bit of a discussion of that here in the board letter. But just to summarize, while the number of units increases by almost 30%, I believe, the number of bedrooms, these are smaller units being planned for senior housing, so the number of bedrooms actually moves from 56 bedrooms to 58 bedrooms, so it's a fairly minor increase. That said, I think it's reasonable to assume that the water use from either of these developments off in the future would be similar. However, in our allocation process, we want to err on the conservative side. And I discussed that with the applicant in the allocation that the board actually assigns to this development is not directly linked to the fees the developer will actually pay. The fees will be based on dwelling units and meter sizes and capacity being demanded by the ultimate project. But for our allocation standpoint, that is, how much water will we assign to this project and remove off our 51 acre feet of annual allocation? It's staff's position that we should take that a conservative approach to that and simply assign an allocation based on 46 multifamily units, because that's as close of a fit as we have to our allocation system. And so that's what I've proposed here. What that has done is this project was originally planned to be phased, or would have been phased over 3 years of allocation, and by moving this up to 46 units, this moves the phasing out over 4 years, as I've described again in the staff report here. There was some spare change, if you will, on the allocation. It came out to be just over 2 acre feet per year over 4 years, and I went ahead and moved that. There's a quarter acre foot or 0.28 acre foot, and I moved that to the first year, and then subsequent years would be a 2 acre foot per year allocation. The other highlights that I'd like to bring up before I open the questions to the board is that the recommendation again is for an intent to serve letter. This is our latest version of intent to serve with conditions. It includes the phasing of the project, and it also includes in bold capacity charges, how they'll be calculated and credited, and what those current capacity charges are per residential unit. With that, staff recommends approval of the request with direction for staff to issue an intent to serve letter based on our allocation system and the numerous conditions that are outlined in the staff report currently.
I just make one more quick comment. All Please. Of our intent to serve letters include that language that we discussed with the earlier public commenter regarding modifications of rates, charges, and things like that.
I have a question, Larry.
Okay, questions and comments
have you,
first.
Have you discussed the phasing with these people? Is it acceptable with them?
Yes.
It is.
As I understand, I have not heard an objection from the applicant, and I had discussed it. Yes, I have discussed it. So
it would seem awkward to me to do it in stages.
I don't believe that, and the applicant can speak to this, but the allocation will come out over the next 4 years. This project is in a in the planning stages, and they'll have a number of years before they'll be ready to actually take that allocation. And then it'll take them some years to actually complete the project. So they may have
the actual construction be delayed until they accumulate.
And again, we can let the applicant speak to this, but I'm assuming that in some cases, at least, that it'll take an applicant a number of years before they're ready to actually commence just the construction. And then they're not really ready for water meters until construction is quite near completion. And they may see that as 2, 3, 4 years off, so that this phasing doesn't affect them. It just helps us meter out our allocations. That's my assumption. The applicant can respond to that.
Any other comments, questions?
The only thing I would add to what the general manager answered is that let's say that things go along swimmingly, to use a water metaphor, and they're ready to get all of their meters in, say, the third year. They always have the option of coming back to the board, and if they're unallocated water, we do have those mid-year corrections in which we right. can shift into that category in order for them to finish, so long as those water is not being used. So
right, we do have the latitude.
There's some flexibility down the line as well.
Mm-hmm. One other minor point that I'd like to make that we haven't really touched on is that the applicant has some process to complete still with county, with, I think, local community groups. I've read that they've moved forward on that since we've last seen them and are seeing better acceptance of the project by the community. The way that we check that issue is in regards to our intent to serve letter and whether this project will actually continue to move swimmingly along, if you will, towards completion, or gets caught up and is not getting approval of the advisory committees of the community or the county planning department, is that our will serve letter has an 8-month expiration date that is based on the applicant receiving a complete project certification from the county, which means that they would have met the numerous issues involved with traffic planning and zoning and these types of things, that I think this project will still have to cross some hurdles there. If what would happen in that case is that if that 8 month is coming 8 months is coming up, this intent to serve would expire and the applicant would be back in front of this board for approval. So that would that will help the board if the project sees substantial changes in iterations over the next months.
A couple questions.
Okay, of staff.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Eaton.
Two questions. The first is, as far as how much water you estimate that this project will use, you base it on the number of apartments, not the number of bedrooms or the number of bathrooms or the number of kitchens, or I mean, it's the same for one bedroom as it is for 10-bedroom place.
Well, I use our current allocation ordinance, and that has a multifamily category, and I use, which is the least water using of our categories, and I use that. We don't have in our ordinance specifically a senior housing category, so that.
But it's just per unit rather than how many bedrooms.
That's correct.
Bathrooms.
That's correct.
Okay. My second question, I think it was a lot along the line of Cliff's, was I can understand how you can do phasing on houses. You build 3 a year or 4 a year or something like that. But apartments, you usually build the whole thing at once rather than a few apartments at a time. So these connections that you're allocating, if they don't need them 1 year, do you pile them up and give them all the final year? Or do they accumulate their allocations over the years?
Yes, and that's a way, in fact, we've written this, is that it's, if we look under that bullet one, will serve letters for the project will be issued in phases, and then no more than X, you know, in the case of the second bullet point, 4.28 acre feet cumulative prior to this date. And so it basically, right, if they don't come and ask for the will serve letter until October 2007, then I can give them the entire will serve letter at that time. But if they want to move the project forward in phases, and that'll depend on the developer and the constraints as you've outlined with apartments or this type of development.
Okay. At this time, is the applicant or representative? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. John Knight with RM Design Group. As Michael mentioned, we were here on April 13th and we're continued along with three other items. And of course, ours is the site behind the Mick Chevron. And we had the thing that happened since that time is one of the items was actually approved on the April 13th. One item was continued to your previous meeting, and I understand that the will serve or intent to serve was approved. And then we would have been scheduled for that meeting, but I asked Michael to hold off and schedule us to this meeting because we were looking at the senior option. And that's something that was suggested by the community. Pushed us back a little bit. Ultimately, we came up with a sketch plan that was submitted for the 46 units. And the units are a little bit smaller. The primary change is there's less of the two-bedroom units in the complex. As Michael mentioned, the overall number of bedrooms is actually not that different. My sense tells me that the overall water use for the residential component, not the landscape component, but the residential component is likely to be actually less. So I told Michael we would probably be preparing some information demonstrating that the water use is actually less for a senior complex. We'll have to come back for that. I think Michael LeBrun's recommendation was, let's go for the full allocation. If you can demonstrate later that you actually need less water, that's fine, but let's make sure we take a conservative opinion, which makes a lot of sense. I understand about the fee increases and the phasing system. Michael and I discussed that last time when we were talking about the 32 units. We are spreading it out over 4 water years, but that's not really 4 years because we catch the tail of this year and then we catch the head of the last year. So if you look at the last date, I can get all of my water allocations October 1st, 2007. So even though it's 4 years, it's only 2 years plus a few months away. So my sense is it'll work timing-wise, even though it's over 4 years. I think as Michael Wynn mentioned, we're going to build, I would estimate that we would build all the units all at the same time rather than trying to allocate and build a quarter of the project. Doesn't really make sense from a construction standpoint. So if just looking at it from a standpoint of moving along quickly, I think Michael Wynn said swimmingly, but let's say we jump in a motorboat and we go 6 months through the county process, we go 6 months through preparing construction documents and 6 months through permitting. Best case scenario, I'm looking at 18 months before I can actually pull building permits, pay my fees. Realistically, it's probably closer to 2 years. So the timing actually, I think, works okay for us on that, from a phasing standpoint. My only request or suggestion, though, is in the very last bullet, the hollow bullet at the end, talks about intent to serve letters being applicable for 2 years. My allocation, my full allocation, doesn't actually come till October 1st, 2007. Does it make sense for that number to be, instead of 2 years, to be 2 years or October 1st, 2007, whichever comes later? Because I'll actually, my allocation will expire, my intent to serve letter would actually expire prior to me being able to get my full allocation. And I understand I have one more year extension and possibility to come back and request some additional allocation, additional water if there is, quote, any excess, but I can't really count on that. I'd like to know that I can count on the allocation. I guess nothing's set in stone, but that this letter, intent to serve letter anyway, at least goes as long as the October 1st, 2007 date. So that's my only comment. Again, we understand the increase in the fees and that we will be subject to those new fees. Thank you.
Any other public comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board then. The board's wishes. Mr. Wynn.
I think the applicant makes sense on that last bullet. For us to say we'll give you an allocation for 3 years, but it's, by the way, it's going to expire at the end of the second year. Somehow I don't think that makes a lot of sense. For us to automatically schedule these folks to come back for some reapproval when we already know today what the conditions of the building are. I just think it's an extra meeting and extra expense for nothing. But we're still holding them to the 8 months in terms of getting their plans in and approved by the county, and so we know they're going to have to move along in a timely manner.
A complete application.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which it's not necessarily full plans, but you've got to fill out all the cross the T's, dot the I's stuff.
So I think if we just change that the hollow bullet, the last hollow bullet, to say 3 years instead of two, and then I think at least giving water intent in that time frame would be consistent.
Okay. Any staff comment on that change?
I'll let John help me out here. I agree. I think the applicant makes a good point, and I think in cases where we have phased allocations that our intent to serve letter should go the length of the phasing.
I'm
trying to think, as opposed to using 3 years or just adding a year, how we can link that to the allocation. So the full allocation for this project is available as of October 1, 2007. That would mean that we'd be ready to set meters at that point, and they should have their project ready. I don't think we want to tie it to just October 1, 2007. We want to say, well, you've got, maybe the extent of that water year, that so that water year ends actually September 30, mm-hmm. 2008. Does that make sense? That then we on a phase project we'd allow the intent to serve letter to go through the end of the water year that the phasing completes in.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be staff's recommendation.
Which would be September 30th, 2008.
And that would be the specific language that we'd include.
Okay. Any other comments? Questions of staff.
So you're saying you're going to put a date in there instead of the word 2 or 3 years?
Correct. So that would be to scratch the second bullet as it reads completely. And so the change would be to have it read, intent to serve letter shall automatically terminate on the first to occur. The first bullet stays the same, and the second bullet goes to September 30th, 2008.
We need a motion then to...
I'll move to approve.
Approve with the changes as noted. Is there a second by Mr. Trotter? Motion by Mr. Wynn? Madam Secretary, could you please call for the vote?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
President Rahel?
Yes. I want to point out that in responding to public concern and redesigning this project by going from 32 units to 46 units, the developer actually committed himself to $190,000 additional fees for supplemental water, which is no small sum.
RRM has big bucks.
and,
it comes out of pigs.
And all I can say is that it's conceivable that with the track record between now and the next 3 years, we may in fact end up with a senior rate that, I don't know whether that will conceivably apply or not, but they certainly have taken the high road in terms of going ahead. I appreciate it.
Are these all units or rented units? How does that work?
They would all be rented, so there'd be one large master meter for the entire complex, so they would all be rented separately.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Item number E2 is our survey results for AGP videotaping that was sent out, and this is a summary of the responses. So, Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. I did my best to summarize the results, and one aspect of the results I brought into the summary table in order to help, in my mind, put this in context, and that aspect of the results is that some 80% of our customers did not return these surveys, and I'm not sure exactly what that says, but I think that to some degree that indicates that you know, the water's flowing out of the faucet and the toilet's flushing, and for that they're quite satisfied.
They're happy.
That said, so what I did was to explain my table that where I've summarized results is I used the percent of all customers. You'll see that second line where I show that the percent of all results, all customers that we mailed to. So under item one, for instance, would you review video recordings of the Napomo Community Service District meetings on cable TV? Of the respondents, they were a bit split, 38% basically saying yes and 38% saying no. And what that equates to on an all customer base is around, we'll call it 8%, 7.25% of our customers weighing in yes or no on that response. And again, that applies throughout the responses. I used that percent of all customers in hopes that that would put these results in some greater context. In the staff report, I've done a little summary work on what costs would be incurred from video recordings. And as you see there, I've estimated that this could be as high as $2,000 a month or in the order of $2,000 a month. Of course, these costs would change. This is based on AGP's original proposal to us back in January of this year, which includes a base meeting duration of 2 hours and additional charges beyond that. It also, I think, as AGP has expressed to us at previous meetings, there are a number of variables that the district could work with to move this number up or down. I felt though that $2,000 was a fair figure given all the variables. And at $2,000 a month, the charge to our customers, all customers of course, would be on the order of 50 cents per month or about $1 per water bill. It would be the cost to all. Now, timing on the meetings is a little bit harder to assess a cost. And I was not really able to come up with any numbers there as to what that would cost our customers to change our meetings to evening meetings. Basically, I think what these results say to us is there aren't strong majority opinions throughout our customer base one way or the other. It is to this board to give staff direction as to what you'd like to see us do with these meetings. We could certainly, we could record, do the audio recording now. We could enhance that with video record of our meetings. One thing I thought about is AGP, of course, offers quite a service. They have a multifaceted service. If we were just looking for video recordings, we could do something on the cheap and set up a tripod in the back of the room and do a digital video recording. Very basic, and that would put, I think the one thing I hear most often about why audio recordings don't give the flavor of the meeting is it's hard to put the faces and the voices together, where just a basic video recording of our proceedings would allow that. That could be done much cheaper than an AGP service, but there are a number of options here. And staff is open to questions and direction from the board at this point.
Any comments at this point from the board, from staff?
I have. I think you're the first.
I'd like to open it up to public comment regarding this item. Possibility of videotaping survey results.
Did you have a comment?
Yeah. Seeing none.
He has a comment.
Then bring it back to the board. Mr. Wynn?
I will support the staff recommendation. I would like to just add a couple of comments. I think this is an item that, although it doesn't have a lot of support today, should be continued to be asked on an annual basis, because the percentage of our customers who are being served by cable is increasing, and as more and more people have access to it, there may in fact be a greater interest. My household does have access to it. I do watch it on Channel 21, the other ones that are filmed. My family think I need to be certified for spending TV time watching such things, but it's very helpful, I think, and a very valuable service. The only other thing I would say in terms of finding alternatives, I have watched a couple of CSD meetings that were held elsewhere that are filmed in the manner that was described. And frankly, they're extremely difficult to watch. It's like home movies gone feral. They're
not well done.
They're not well done. And frankly, you don't have a sense of what's going on in the meeting when it's kind of a bleached out color and the faces are at great distance and such. So I think at the time that we do get around to it, I'd like to see a reasonably watchable product produced, but not this year.
Okay. Mr. Eamon?
Well, I was a little disappointed, not with the turnout. I mean, if people don't want to have an opinion on this or make their opinion known, that's up to them. But I had hoped that more people would be interested in the internet version, because that's very handy. But if they don't want it, and they clearly don't in any great quantity, I don't think they ought to be asked to pay for it. Hmm. My other interest, though, was the night meetings. I would support night meetings just based on the fact that overwhelming people, a large number of the people who responded to that preferred the night meetings. Now, if that might create a problem for other people attending night meetings, then I wouldn't be insistent upon it. I know the staff doesn't want to put in a 24-hour day once every 2 weeks, but that was the only comment I had out of it, is that I would support night meetings if other people would.
Okay. Mr. Trotter?
In my judgment, this is not a definitive study. Not the staff did an excellent job, but the response was poor. And I think that in itself is a reflection of apathy. And this board, in my judgment, goes out of its way to abide by the law and act in the best interest of the community. And it has been for a long time. So I think status quo is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Trotter.
You have any feelings about night meetings?
I'm against night meetings. It's hard on the staff. Mm. And it's a personal thing on my part. I'm a morning person, not an evening person. So.
I can say that when I first started attending meetings here, they were night meetings.
Right.
NCSD had night meetings.
Exactly.
The only reason I was originally appointed here is because I was the only person that showed up besides the board members. The first time I showed up, they actually stopped the meeting and said, "Why are you here?" And I said I was watching, and of course that's not a sign of sanity. But the point is that very few people came out. Seniors who have time to attend such meetings often don't drive at night. Working folks, is true, are freer in the evening, but they also have children doing homework and after school games and a whole range of other things they're committed to. So we had very, very poor turnout. Now, maybe it's different now. Maybe more people would come. We have proved that if there's a special event, when we hold night meetings, people will come out in the evening. And I think we need to continue that pattern. I see that as part of the recommendation here. But every other week in the nighttime, I don't see it. And for county staff and for developers and other people who, in fact, work during the workday and are willing to make this part of their work commitment, I think it's great. I don't know whether the press would be here late at night, but I do come to the night meetings for the advisory council, and when we're there at 11 o'clock at night, they're not, and I don't blame them. It's just the days get long. So if we take every meeting we've held here that started at 9, and we translate that starting at 7, we would be here till 10 o'clock every other week for sure,
and we
would be here till after midnight.
Sometimes.
A number of times, and frankly, I don't think that's a... I don't think that's very useful.
Most meetings have gone beyond 12 o'clock.
Exactly.
It equates to 4 hours.
Yeah, you know, 3-4 hours would be the usual. So that would, if we started at 6:30, that's 10:30. And I have found through living this long that there's a big difference between those that express that they would prefer meetings held at a certain time and how many of those same show up. Mm. So at this point in time, I guess we need a motion. Although the director who is most pro-taping is not here to give their input. And with that in mind, I would like to maybe have a motion to continue this item to the next agenda so she can be here, that director can be here to provide their thoughts and input. I think that's fair. I don't know how the
rest
of you feel.
That's fine with me. It's not that urgent. Okay, so. I would like to make a motion. I won't do it today, but I would like to make a motion just to get it on record that we did vote on it, that we consider night meetings for a trial period. I'll make that motion next time. Just because some people, there have been a number of people in the community have asked me to, why don't we have night meetings, and at least we could give it a vote. So I'll move that we table this until the next meeting and reconsider it then.
That's fine.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Eby. We have a second by Mr. Nguyen. Madam Secretary.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. At this point in time, it's 10:09. Our next item, and I know many of you came for this item, but I would like us to take a short break, and we will reconvene at 10:20.
Are you going to do this?
No.
On this one? Or this for later?
That has to be later, because that's potential.
Yeah. Bring the meeting back to order. Item number E3 is the County Resource Management System. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. This item is specifically to allow our directors to discuss in the public forum the response to the County Board of Supervisors' recent decision to maintain a level severity 2 in regards to the Napomo Mesa groundwater resources, and that decision, of course, was made, I don't have that date in front of me, but I believe it was May 10th, that we were up in front of the Board of Supervisors and lobbying. The district, of course, made quite an effort to lobby for a level severity 3. I believe the main point of our issue with level severity 3 is the number of conditions that the Board of Supervisors put on level severity 2, I think we're in agreement with, that the difficulty is the urgency that a level severity 2 reflects as opposed to a level severity 3. And as we all know, level severity 2 says we have 7 years until a problem exists that we need to resolve. And with that in mind, I thought it was telling that once that decision was made by County Board of Supervisors, the county staff was directed to do some work and return to the board at a later date with responses to a number of directions and how these conditions would be carried out. The date wasn't specified.
It was simply was not an urgency to get this back to the board agenda, and I think that clearly had there been a level of severity 3 defined and agreed upon, there would have also been a date by which time the county staff would be told to return to the board with answers and resolutions to the issues that a level severity 3 would bring along with it. In the event, where we're at today, I think what the district is, of course, continued its efforts, ongoing efforts to bring supplemental water to the Napomo Mesa area. We do have a staff has a meeting planned with county planners. That's tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. That was as early as we could get that scheduled. I was hoping to have something to report on in regards to a staff level meeting to this board prior by this date, but we are unable to do that. And I think we heard, of course, that the Board of Supervisors have made a change to their growth ordinance for the Napomo or South County planning area, which, of course, is our area. Napomo Mesa overlies that. And I think this board can direct staff. I think it makes sense since our allocation ordinance is tied directly to that annual growth cap percentage that the county has just reviewed and revised, that we can look to come back to the board as soon as possible with a revised allocation ordinance. That'll help us, I believe, on the water resources issues. But other than that, you know, of course, district staff will continue to work with county planning staff to define a mechanism in order to implement a area-wide planning standard that for supplemental water to water all new development. But there's no date, no specifics as to when that might occur. I know that a number of directors have some inputs and additional discussion on this, so I'll turn it over. Answer any questions.
What I would like to do, if the board feels appropriate, is to open it to public comment before we have our comments and questions discussion here.
I'm happy to do that. I would like to hear from county staff first, simply because they came today as a courtesy to explain more clearly what their intentions are and how they propose to go about it, and I think that would be useful before we widen the discussion.
I would certainly like to hear county staff, and we will forego the 3-minute guidelines.
My name is Kim Murray. I'm a division manager with planning and building, and I'm here mostly to answer any questions that arise, but also to briefly summarize what happened yesterday, although several of you were there. The County Board of Supervisors did adopt a 1.8% allocation rate for the Napomo Mesa area. That roughly translates to 122 units for this next fiscal year. They also did not allow carryover, so the 122 is a hard number for that area. The thing that you're referring to in terms of the resource management system and the level of capacity, either a 2 or a 3, they did take some actions at the May 10th meeting. They gave staff direction to look into the formation of a JPA to encourage collaboration and cooperation in terms of how to bring in supplemental water, sources of supplemental water, looking for ways to require a 15% conservation for all water uses, all water users within the Napomo Mesa area, looking at conditioning general plan amendments so that they would be required to provide supplemental water or contribute to supplemental water before they could go forward, and that land divisions would be allowed to go forward without conditioning them for supplemental water, but that development from those land divisions would be responsible for contributing to supplemental water. We are scheduled to go back on July 19th to the Board of Supervisors with a status report, and so what's happening in the meantime is our staff, John Hand is our main contact point, but we'll be meeting with NCSD staff, with some of the water purveyors to try to talk to all the stakeholders and come up with a strategy for how we're going to accomplish these things. So I'm available for questions if you have any.
Questions, comments from the board at this time?
Kim, when I look over the sort of the six things that were agreed on the 17th, the first thing listed is says look into a forming a joint powers agreement with purveyors to facilitate this. Is your department prepared to move ahead with the other things or prior to the formation of this, or does that have to be the first step?
I don't believe that has to be the first step, especially where the water conservation measures are involved. Those are definitely things we can address through area plan standards, those sorts of things. I don't know that any of that is a linear process. I think it's all going to be going on at once.
And then when you say find ways to increase the supply by bringing in supplemental water, does this mean the county is going to initiate a study for that purpose, or are you taking notice of the studies we've made, or how does that work?
I don't believe the county can put itself in the position of providing water to people at this point. I think what we're encouraging is our participation in your efforts to find supplemental water and the other water purveyors as well.
I also heard that there would be increased from Cacho would be increasing supply by conservation, mesa-wide, and also improving recharge of the basin by possibly, rather than letting water run off to who knows where, to actually have some areas where water is channeled to retain it and then let it percolate. And improvement in those kinds of facilities. That was one of his points that he brought up.
All right.
Mr. Trotter.
In my judgment, 15% conservation is going to be very, very difficult to attain. The mechanics of imposing it, if we come to that, is going to be awkward and cause a lot of strife in the community, in my judgment, especially Black Lake. And because Black Lake has so much landscaping, that's the appealing, one of the appealing things about Black Lake. So I think we all should approach conservation very carefully, well thought out, and it could be a great education process.
It will
be. To accomplish this.
It will be. Thank you, Mr. Trotter.
We do have a conservation subcommittee.
Right.
Which will also work along the same lines. We'll try to keep you in the loop as to what we're doing. But when the new water rates kick in, we may discover that we get a sizable savings simply on the basis of increased cost that doesn't require anything, except of course we do need the support of county planning in terms of how homes are designed internally for water use, and then various kinds of landscaping, at least initial landscaping plans, although once you sell a home, what they choose to do in their own yard they can and will do. I noticed though, when I looked at this, I would be curious about your thinking. Item 5 said land divisions would be approved without a condition for supplemental water, but they'd have to pay a supplemental water fee before they were given a building permit, which I understand. But item 4 said general plan amendments would have to have supplemental water as a condition of approval, and then you say no building permits until water is available. How do you see this working with, say, mutual water companies or people who say, a single-family home, and they overlay a sufficient source, they could drop a well in the ground and water themselves?
I don't believe that any of those details have been worked out. I think that action by the board on the 10th was direction to staff to look for ways to make these things happen. So at this point, I don't have those answers for
you. We're always interested in your answers, obviously. Good.
Mr. Eby?
I copied this list of six things that the Board of Supervisors gave to planning as an assignment to the level two, level three issue. I copied this from the your staff report that you presented yesterday. And the only reason I mention these is these six items were mentioned as a solution to the problem of as to why the county didn't need to go to 1.1% for Napomo. And I looked at these as not solutions, but thoughts, because I see that you're going to have a lot of problems with all six of these making them happen. The first one, look into forming a joint powers agreement with water purveyors to facilitate the acquisition of supplemental water. That's essentially forming a water district to me, and that could take years. So I'll be very curious to see what your solution to that one is. The second one is find ways to involve all water users on the Mesa to have 15% conservation. I'd really be interested to see what your authority is to do that to all users. So you have a real challenge there. Find ways to increase bringing supplemental water. For the county to do this, that's again what authority do you have to do that? I think you got a real tough one there. Four and five are the things I think the county can do something about. General plan amendments requiring supplemental water, and land divisions requiring supplemental water. I don't know how you get the supplemental water to these people or how you charge them the fee. I don't know legally how you do that, but that's why you get paid what you get paid, is because you're going to come up with those solutions.
Actually, that's why our county council gets paid what they get
right.
paid.
And then finally, the last one, incorporate a mechanism for collecting supplemental water fee. Again, I'll be interested in seeing what legal mechanism you come up with for that, because if you could do all of these things, maybe as Cacho said yesterday, it would be a solution to our growth problems. But I think you've got a real challenge even doing 50% of these. So good luck.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments of Ms. Murray? Thank you. And public comment on this item. Notice that the development community is here. Mr. Nestor.
Good morning, Greg Nestor. I'm kind of shooting from the hip here. I guess I don't know the director's position and how to comment, so I'm not sure if this is the right order of processes from my side. If the director would like to let us know what direction they're intending to take on this item, and might be able to comment it on more thoroughly, but if not, I want to start my 3 minutes pretty quick.
Well, I'll be happy to open it up again to public comment after we have the board discussion. I just felt that input from the community would
provide
some input to
our
discussion.
I'll save my comments until later then. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other public comment on this item, County Resource Management System? Then at this time, I'll bring it back to the board, and it's open for discussion. Just wing it. You know, this was sort of air your thoughts and feelings.
When I asked this to be agendized, my concern is that I think both you, Mr. President, and Mr. Eby did excellent work in the research and presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Warren.
Sorry about that. I think the board did an excellent job in doing their research and making presentations before the supervisors individually, and then collectively when they met as a Board of Supervisors. I think staff joined them effectively. I was there for the presentations. I think you brought to bear all of the data that was available, and frankly, the first 9 pages of the staff report concurred with you to the letter, including the statement on page 5 that the data actually did call for a level 3 severity, and that's what the definition said, and that's what it meant. So I was very disappointed that they disregarded the evidence and chose to go to a level 2, which we have understood from the very beginning when a level 2 was first imposed. There never was any data to support a level 2. It was always a political compromise between the concerns of the community and the desire of the development community to continue building homes, which is important for us as well. My disappointment is simply that by refusing to admit the facts, we don't provide enough impetus then for everybody to come to the table and pay for the water we need. And it's not just my fears that this will happen. In fact, we have heard from legal counsel from other agencies saying, well, looks like there's not the emergency you guys thought there was. Just venting, obviously I'm very disappointed in the decisions that were made. I don't think they were responsible in terms of the data. And if the resource management system is to be a factual document which aids the supervisors in making decisions, I think the integrity of that analysis has been undermined by that decision. I think it's very bad. In consequence, I urge our board to begin the process of saying what can we do unilaterally, if necessary, to defend this aquifer. I've resisted moratoriums ever since I came on this board. I've never voted for one yet, as you all well know. And I would be very reluctant to do it again. But if that's the only way that we can bring supplemental water in, then a limited moratorium, at least in time until we have signed agreements in hand, may be the only way we can go. The damage to working families would be huge. The damage to single lot parcel owners whose personal plans and everything makes this time the only time they can build a home, and now they have to put that on hold for a year or two. All of these would be horrendous costs, and I don't want us to minimize that at all. So I really urge county staff and our own staff to work very earnestly and with a tremendous amount of energy, see if this can't be resolved quickly. If we see evidence that this is in fact going to be resolved and the players can be brought to the table, good. But if it's going to be, let's just keep on talking, meanwhile we're going to keep on passing out building permits, that's not a workable long-term solution. And we've done this for 3 years now. This is not something that's happened overnight. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Eby?
Well, I think we said it pretty much at the at that Board of Supervisors meeting where they failed to recognize a level 3. I'm not sure, as the staff report says and as some of the public newspapers and so forth have reported, that the county did vote for a level 2. I think they didn't vote for anything. They said, go back. They told the planning people to go back and do these things. But I don't remember a specific level 2 being re-voted at that last meeting. We might be in a de facto level 2 condition because that's what they voted for in November.
Right.
But I don't think they specifically voted level 2 at the last meeting. The three things that we were asking for was that the county declare, certify a level 3, that any new GPAs that increase the water use over the current general plan, that those GPAs be required to offset the excess water use with supplemental water, and that any additional land divisions offset the additional use of water that they had with supplemental water. The details, we asked the county to come up with the details on how to implement that. I don't think our position is any different. That's what we'd like to see. If county planning can answer these six questions to effectively do that, I think it'd be great. But I guess we'll have to wait till, I believe it's July 19th, to hear what the what their solutions are. Other than that, I think our position is clear. We've recommended things that should reduce the depletion of our groundwater, and that's all we can do until we hear what the county's plans are.
Mr. Trotter.
One of the motivations for the county not going to level three, in my judgment, is the impact on the economy, which would be significant. The loss of jobs, which would be significant. But on a long-term basis, it has the potential of damaging the livelihood and the support of the people that are here. That's our primary obligation. We've got to support what our obligations are at this time. And going to level three will help do that. In my judgment, it's going to take a lot longer for the water to flow, supplemental water to flow, than we all estimate at this time. It's inherent in projects like that. Plus, we don't have the support, presently don't have the support of the other major users. So it's not going to level three works to the detriment, long-term detriment of the community.
Thank you, Mr. Trotter. The way right now, at this point in time, the other water purveyors can be brought into sharing in the supplemental water project one of two ways. Either through a JPA that would be between the county and all water purveyors on the Mesa, or through the court settlement, which occurs first, or if they incur in our lifetime, that's open for discussion. But that to me is the two methods that could be employed. And they still are working on the settlement for the main Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District and Santa Maria litigation. We're after that before they start on our portion of the settlement. You know, and as George aptly pointed out, a lot of money has been spent on this litigation and a lot of time has gone by. I would have hoped that it would have happened by now, and at least for the main portion, and then they'd be starting or working on our settlement at this point in time. However, having the opportunity to form a joint powers agreement, as Mr. Seitz probably pointed out, that this may take a while. Mr. Wynn, I think you pointed out, it may take a while. But I think it's a path that we need to embark upon relatively soon. If the decision of the board had been a private industry type thing, the meeting to start the process would have probably been scheduled for the next day. Unfortunately, government takes a little longer, sometimes decades. But we need to pursue that immediately. I don't feel necessarily that a JPA must be concluded before we can also start implementing some of these other, especially 4 and 5 and 6. Those can happen concurrently because those could be area plan standards or planning area standards or whatever you call them. And those could be hammered out and put in place much sooner. In doing so, I think it provides an impetus to all parties involved to get to the table and make the necessary hard decisions, compromises, walk away with a slice of the pie rather than all or nothing. Mr. Trotter.
I'd like to ask John. John, does the county have any powers or influence to cause these other entities to become involved?
Yes.
What would you describe those to us?
Well, I think Kim, through development of land use ordinances and area planning standards, they can have a tremendous amount of influence. Typically, I'm not going to be perfect on this because I don't represent PUC companies. But when you have companies like Cal Cities, they have to go through rate hearings before the PUC in order to increase rates. However, if there's an area plan standard, for example, that a new development will pay for supplemental water, that is, from what I understand from talking with the folks from PUC, those are the types of fees that they don't have to reconfirm through the PUC.
Right.
So there's a great amount of influence there. Also, if you just take a look at 4 and 5 on the list here, implementing general plan amendments that require supplemental water as part of the mitigation process, of course, will have a great influence on water purveyors. And the same with 5, if there's no building permits issued until supplemental water is available on the mesa, also would put would encourage water purveyors to find supplemental water. And then this 6 here, I think, is pretty much what is a tag along to what is going on in the Santa Maria Valley, where they do have a mechanism for individual folks or small development that drills wells into the groundwater basin, where they also have to pay a supplemental water charge associated with that. So I think there's a lot of mechanisms that the county can implement. I think, really those are the ones that they can implement individually. I think also what would be important is their participation in a joint powers agreement. And hopefully that would be a mechanism where all these things could be implemented. This is just me talking, but when I talk to developers, their concern isn't the requirement or the payment for supplemental water. I think as a general principle, they're in agreement with it, although it may hurt them in the pocketbook. What I hear them say is they want a pragmatic approach to it, which basically means that if we pay for it, we get it. I think that they would be anxious to, or at least some of them indicated to me that they're really actually anxious to participate in supplemental water. But what we need to do is, from just thinking, look at it globally, if this district has we have supplemental water requirements, and from developers I've talked to, what their concern is that somebody develops here in Napomo, they're going to pay one set of charges for supplemental water. But if they can go 3 miles outside of our boundaries and get a general plan amendment, and a very similar subdivision goes in, and they're allowed to mine the groundwater basin without a supplemental water charge, the economies of the two developments are skewed drastically towards the development that is receiving their water from the groundwater basin, not through supplemental water, and paying cheap water, cheaper, and I know water's cheap, but cheaper water than a development community that would develop within our community. So I think that's the why I see the JPA as being a requirement to develop that pragmatic approach so that the development community and the water purveyors can be in sync, and where development opportunities aren't predicated on the cost of water. So that's just sort of my global thought on it. That's why I think 4 and 5 and 6 augment number one, but I think number one is ultimately going to be that mechanism that will balance the water allocations between the development community and the water purveyors.
Okay, Mr. Wynn.
John, if I can ask specifically a question about number one, and if you tell us that we need to talk about your answer in closed session instead of now, that's fine. I don't have a problem.
No.
My concern is this. Joint powers agreement is something that LAFCO or the county could facilitate between us and the purveyors. But do you think it at all likely that the purveyors would sign a joint powers agreement when the court settlement and that agreement, it will supersede it anyway?
I'll leave this to Mr. Markman to give the definitive answer. But I don't believe that, let me say this, I think the two can work together. I see the settlement agreement as being an agreement between the district, Cal Cities, and the Woodlands to address existing problems.
And rural. No, rural.
There's no allocation in there for rural. As it stands right now, I see the JPA as being that mechanism that would provide water for future development. Now, do I think there's some overlap in there? Yeah, probably is. I'm sure a water engineer can argue overlap. But I don't think that anybody actually believes that the 2,000 acre feet that is allocated in that judgment is going to water the Mesa in future development into the future. That's just, nobody says that. And that's not the purpose of it.
So the JPA could be pursued even while the other negotiations
Absolutely.
Go on. And
Absolutely.
It could be done parallel. Okay, that's important.
Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion from the board?
Then again, I'd like to reopen it to public comment. And on this item, thank you, Mr. Nestor.
All right. Appreciate your comments. Thank you. Greg Nestor, stakeholder in the Pomo Builder. I was at the same hearing that Mr. Eby was at, and I believe the charge that he's cited is the one that I heard. I don't think there was a vote on level 2 versus level 3. I think that we were given an assignment as a community and group to resolve our issues before the level 3 was implemented or not implemented, and that's part of what I'm here to do today, to reaffirm our commitment on our side to find the solution. I think, as the word moratorium flies around the room here, that that is basically a red flag saying that I quit the political process and the democratic process that we have been enduring through the whole thing. I would have liked to have been done the first year of the 3 years you're referring to and having a solution, but I also feel like we are probably closer to the table to finding a solution than we ever have been with the level of understanding that's out there right now. I always have trouble referring to the Papadopoulos report, because to me it's another one in the series, and I take and kind of average them all together to develop an opinion. And you know, one of the things too in that report that they talk about is that there'll be a continued declining annual rainfall, and this particular year is far in excess of what the highest expectations of the Papadopoulos report had predicted. So to me, it's just another report that has respect that you average out to understand that there is a situation that we have to address. I want to remind the directors that there is no level four. Level three is as high as it goes. That's the worst case scenario. I have to ask you, as you talk about moratorium, if it is really that bad, for the same findings that allowed you to allocate 51 acre feet annually towards community development, what happened to the basis that you made that decision on, and is that gone, or are we really just playing a political game with the county process here at the risk of a lot of property owners and stakeholders in Napomo? And I do look at the back page and see that a lot of closed session has to do with litigation. I think that that back page would be a lot heavier in the event that moratorium was applied to the democratic process that we're trying to endure here. I understand there's meetings tomorrow with the county and NCSD. I know I was invited and the home builders were invited by both Supervisor Patterson and Cacho to participate in a solution towards the water situation in Napomo. I talked to Cacho and asked him who the lead agency was, and he said he would head that, but he would hope that NCSD might be the lead agency in gathering those people together. I'm happy to sponsor it or provide it or participate, whatever the forum is, to come to some resolution that won't hurt the community and the people who have invested in this area and have a positive direction for the vision in Napomo's long term. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nestor. Any other public comment? Mr. Montgomery.
Hi, my name is Victor Montgomery. I'm with RM Design Group, and I just had a couple of general comments. Looking at things with a bit of a historical perspective, a moratorium, if you're even thinking about that, is a huge step. And in my experience in this county, it is not a step that brings people together. Cambria is not an example of people coming together to find water solutions, and they've had a moratorium in place for forever, for 20 years. Didn't work. Templeton has not had water services available for a long time, far more than 3 years. That I understand it's frustrating, but when you look at three compared to 20, you would not see a moratorium being something that facilitates solution finding. Clearly, the Los Osos moratorium have not facilitated solution finding. It tends to, in my experience, drive people away from finding a solution to the physical problem to simply dividing them along political lines so they can continue the fight without a solution emerging. You know, if you ask the engineers working on the Cambria desal plant what the current state of affairs is, if they approve a desal plant, they're going to get one-third the water that they could have gotten out of a desal plant 20 years ago for three times the price. So I would urge you to be very cautious about thinking about a moratorium. I would also share Greg's concern about the ability to make the findings for a moratorium, given the activities that have occurred over the past year or so with your district. Last but not least, I think it would be just a real tragedy to see the work and investment that's gone into Old Town Napomo stop cold, which is what will happen under a moratorium. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Montgomery. Any other public comment on this item? Ms. Berg.
Clara Bergman, Chestnut Villas and Kanata Ranch. A couple of years ago, while performing our due diligence on the property located at Chestnut and Thompson, Greg and I were encouraged by a number of Old Town Napoma community leaders that Old Town would become a thriving downtown and that investing here was a sure bet. The property was acquired with funds provided by several local residents. They are not millionaires, simply hardworking people like the rest of us in this room. We submitted a concept to Chuck Stevenson, Old Town Association, NCAC, and the NCSD, and received comments like, this is exactly what we are looking for. And for those of you who don't remember, I brought the renderings of that particular project. Based on the, excuse me, this was exactly what we're looking for. An intent to serve letter by the NCSD followed. Based on the letter, we proceeded to spend several hundred thousand dollars more on design, engineering, environmental reports, and carrying costs, to name a few of the expenditures. I have several questions, but I'm going to pose one of them now. Where do our investors, Greg Nestor and I, stand as it pertains to the letter of intent for Chestnut Villas should you adopt a moratorium? Later, we purchased Kanata Ranch. We learned from the NCSD that we needed to procure supplemental water and to participate in providing the funds to build the infrastructure. Several times, we offered to provide our share of those funds. Early on, various NCSD members advised us that if we wished to procure water from another entity, this would be acceptable to the NCSD. We met with Rural Water Company, Cal Cities, and Santa Maria. All three would very much like to sell us water. Cal Cities and Rural Water are not permitted to sell us water, as the Kanata Ranch is in the sphere of influence of the NCSD. Santa Maria said they would very much like to sell us water, but they have an exclusive memorandum of understanding and that we must go through the NCSD because we are in the sphere of influence. We submitted an application to the NCSD after waiting for months. An ad hoc committee was created with whom we met and were advised that NCSD would like to serve us water. The NCSD cleared the way for us to meet again with Santa Maria. Once again, Santa Maria offered to sell us and anyone else who needs water as much as 10,000 acre feet. We agreed to participate in the financial costs necessary to build the infrastructure to bring in the supplemental water, as well as any consumption costs going forward. We met with NCSD again last week. Once again, we were told that the NCSD would like to annex us and that we are to proceed with our plans to submit to the NCSD. The NCSD advised us that although they will be purchasing 3,000 acre feet of water, none of it will be available to us. This was fine with us, as Santa Maria has up to 10,000 acre feet available for purchase. We have spent in excess of $1 million since August of 2004. Our clock is ticking at the rate of $2,000 a day plus development costs. Now we are told that there will be a moratorium because the NCSD wants to force the Woodlands and Cal Cities to purchase water, and that the Board of Supervisors should adopt a countywide Level 3 moratorium. Various members of the board have told us that it will not impact Crystal Oaks. How that can be, I don't know. Our council has advised us that a Level 3 would be a moratorium on permits. A Level 3 is the highest severity level, which will trigger the moratorium on the entire permitting process, including annexation. The Crystal Oaks partners are willing to contribute for both infrastructure and supplemental water capital. Chestnut Villas investors are willing to contribute financially toward infrastructure and supplemental water. Greg Nestor is willing to contribute toward infrastructure and supplemental water. And there are numerous builders, developers, planners in this room that are willing to contribute for infrastructure and supplemental water. Combined, there should be more than needed funds to build the infrastructure and the procurement of supplemental water. So here are a couple of questions. Why is the NCSD so determined to force the Woodlands and Cal Cities to do business with you when they have plenty of their own water? Why won't the NCSD step up and do business with those of us who wish to do business with you and are willing and able to financially do so, rather than impact the economic base of an entire community? Has the NCSD considered that the board of 3,200 customers is adversely impacting the lives of approximately 23,000 people in the greater Napomo area? Has the NCSD considered the economic consequences of the entire county if a level 3 was adopted? Your response would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mrs. Burton. A couple of comments, Mr. President.
Mr. Seitz.
First of all, just to dissuade any apprehension, typically levels of severity are, if you take a look at the resource, I'll let Kim speak to this, but it's not countywide. It's not, you adopt levels of severity by areas, and if you take a look in the resource management report itself, it does lay out the areas. So Napomo has never requested a countywide level severity 3. It's just for the Napomo Mesa planning area. Secondly, as to the Woodlands and the Cal Cities, that water is subject to a settlement in litigation. It's not, I think, the reality is that the Woodlands and the Cal Cities agreements that are on the table right now are in the draft settlement agreements to settle the litigation. It's not, and kind of remember this, Woodlands is a party to the litigation, Cal Cities is a party to the litigation, and there's an attempt to resolve the litigation through settlement processes. So that's why you see those water commitments, or you hear talk about water commitments from the Woodlands and Cal Cities. It is a mechanism, or what sometimes you call in legal parlance a physical solution to a groundwater adjudication, and that's what the parties are seeking to agree to. It's not, I don't think the idea of the district imposing supplemental water on Woodlands or the district imposing supplemental water on Cal Cities is very accurate. I think it's just the opposite. I think all three parties are looking for a physical solution to the groundwater basin. So I don't think that that analogy is correct. The idea here is that you have the adjudication. I think, although there could be some argument, the physical solution to the adjudication does not address entirely future development. That's just the way it works. The JPA and the extra water that people think that, and maybe they do, that Santa Maria has, may provide that solution to future development and the need for supplemental water. And so that's where the other requests for supplemental water come into play. But I would not take a look at the adjudication and the allocation and adjudication as being that amount of water required to water the entire Mesa area under the current general plan or all these future amendments that are on the board.
Okay, did you have a comment?
Just one more comment.
Okay.
Because I noticed Ms. Murray busily taking notes, which is important, and I appreciate that. Sometimes there's confusion about where this JPA or where the supplemental water is required. And we have three domains that get confused with each other. It doesn't mean Napomo, and it doesn't mean the South County Planning Area. It means just the mesa. There are all sorts of things that might be said about water supply on the mesa that do not apply east of Thompson or up in the hills on the east side. They've been found by the court to be in a different aquifer. And because I noticed yesterday a developer who's not here today, make it very clear, proceeded to tell the Board of Supervisors that there was how many hundred square miles in the South County planning area, and therefore to have decent density, we could have 200 times what we've got, it would all fit in. And of course, he was counting all of the hillsides up to the Tematati Ridge and over the top into Sway Creek and all sorts of areas that are not buildable, don't have water supply. So we need to stay focused within the area that the court has declared as the Napomo hydraulic sub-area. Mm-hmm. And that's the area that we're concerned about here.
Yeah, and that roughly affects a little over 12,000 folks.
Right.
Any further public comment on this item?
Comment on what she said.
Well, I would like to then bring it back to the board and close it to public comment.
Okay, well, I want to make a response to what she said.
Okay. Seeing no further public comment on this item, I will bring it back to the board and Mr. Eby. And then I have
the last speaker said that in a meeting last week that the NCSD said that they wanted to annex Crystal Oaks. I was at that meeting and I didn't hear anybody represent that the NCSD wanted to annex Crystal Oaks. What we did at that meeting was we laid out all of the procedures for annexation, both the NCSD procedures and the LAFCO procedures, and discussed what those were so that the applicants would understand all of the processes they need to go through. As far as the NCSD wanting to annex them, that's a decision made by the people at this board when it comes up before them. So I don't think any promises were made there. I didn't hear any. I didn't hear any evidence that we would like to annex them. We told them some of the benefits if they were annexed to us, how that would benefit our supplemental water program. But as far as us wanting to annex anybody, I don't think we made any such promises. Second thing I heard was that that somebody was being told that there will be a moratorium. I never heard that there will be a moratorium. Nobody told me that there will be a moratorium. So I don't know where that came from. Third, she said the level 3 will trigger a moratorium. We went over this at that last meeting with the Board of Supervisors quite a bit because there was some fear that a level 3 does trigger a moratorium. Our legal counsel and their legal counsel went back and forth on this, and we could find no evidence that a moratorium was mandatory. In fact, we made a big deal about it. We even had a slide up there that said a building moratorium or, the big or, other appropriate measures. And it's the other appropriate measures that the county is trying to work out. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody that I have heard has proposed a moratorium. Maybe they have and I haven't heard it. But to me, a moratorium is an admission of failure. If we were to propose a moratorium, it would be because we failed to find water. I mean, you go to the bank and if you ask the bank for money, and they say, no, you don't have any more in the bank, then that's a moratorium because you don't have any. If we don't have any water here, that would be a reason for a moratorium. We can't supply water that we don't have. So, like I say, that would be a failure. We're trying very hard to get supplemental water here to replace the water that's being depleted from the aquifer to avoid just such an occurrence. And I'm fully confident that we will be successful in getting supplemental water here and that a moratorium will not be necessary. So a moratorium to me is a failure, and as long as we're working towards supplemental water and towards the efforts that we're working for with the county, I think we can avoid that.
Okay, well, thank you. Mr. Trotter, I just have one more, and I'll make it short. At this point in time, I would certainly not be in favor of a moratorium. I view a moratorium as maybe holding a club over other it's like a child in a sandbox with other children. If you don't play the game my way, I'm going to take my toys and go home. Hate to say it, that doesn't work. We all need to play together. And a moratorium, either the threat of or using it as a club held over people's head to get them to do something, is not the way to go. We just need to sit down, put all our cards on the table, here's where we feel we stand, and work it from there. The only reason I would ever be in support of a moratorium is because suddenly, let's say ConocoPhillips is starting to pump seawater out of the aquifer rather than fresh water, and I say, uh-oh, we have got a big problem. Then you need to talk moratorium, because seawater intrusion has already happened, or is starting to happen at the edges. And where their well is, fortunately, it's close enough that, you know, gives us a little leeway, but Woodlands would soon be, instead of nice green greens and fairways, they'd be salt. So with that, I believe Mr. LeBrun and staff are working with the county. They have a meeting tomorrow to start working on these items. And I also want to add, I had the opportunity to call Pat Beck before she went on vacation, talk to her, and she and I will be meeting. I will call her after she comes back, which is June 1st, I believe. And she and I and a small contingent will be meeting, and just, we're not going to say, well, here's what we need to do. That's for staff and from both the county and NCSD to work out. Hopefully some of the other people will join us. I see Pat Beck and members of the board and her higher contingent. We sort of sweep the highway clean such that the workers can get out there and get the job done as quickly as possible. That's where I see our position. It's not to direct those people. It's just they come and say, we've got a problem here, and it gets resolved. That's sort of like management and aerospace, you know. They're there to sweep the highway clean such that the worker bees can get the job done. Launch it, shoot it, blow it up, whatever. And with that said, I believe, Mr. LeBrun, have we given you adequate direction?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then we will then move on to item F, manager's report, which is a lot.
Thank you, President Verheilig.
Thank you very much, members of the public who are now leaving, for staying. Thank you.
I'll try to keep the manager's report brief here. I have a written report in front of you. I have a few items to discuss in addition to that written report, but I also realize that we've got a closed calendar agenda that I think will take us some time to get through. So. In my effort to be brief, if I miss anything that you have questions about, of course, I'm open to questions. We have our budget will be before the board following our workshop that we held on May 13th. Will be before the board for final budget adoption at our next regular meeting. That will be June 8th. Note about our meeting with the Area 1 Annexation Subcommittee meeting note there. Rainfall totals, I think we've seen the end of the rain for the year. I don't want to call that before it's over, but it has been an excellent year. I don't think as strong within the Santa Maria and Napomo area as it has been to the north and south of us, but nonetheless an excellent rain year. I have an update on here on the Hermrick well. This is a transmittal. This was included in your package, a transmittal that
our consultant Tim Cleith has put together, along with a more in-depth geophysical log interpretation. He has forwarded that to Pacific Geotechnical Associates in Bakersfield, and we expect to have a second opinion back in approximately 2 weeks. I'll keep the board posted on that as we have as that continues to develop. Urban Water Management Plan, I have contacted SAIC. We have a meeting scheduled for June 2nd. I did go over the scope of work carefully. There was some discussion when we approved SAIC for this contract as to what the schedule would include and presentations and matrices and these types of things. And in the scope of work, there is an allowance for an initial public meeting where the entire urban water management plan would be described in a general sense in the process for updating our plan. We'll go over with that again in the public forum and with all the directors. And so following the kickoff meeting on June 2nd, we'll schedule a specific date for that to get back in front of the board so that we make sure that the entire board of directors has inputs into this process early on. Santa Maria Pipeline, that of course is our supplemental water pipeline project. I had a meeting scheduled for yesterday with Cannon Associates, and we had to reschedule that meeting to this afternoon. So I'll be heading up to San Luis Obispo this afternoon. That's the way decided it would work out best. I'll get up there and to sit down with a team of Cannon planners and engineers from both their mechanical department that's assisted us with our feasibility study, but also with the civil department, and discuss just the broad approach to this project and what aspects of the project we can continue to move forward as, of course, our CEQA consultant continues to do his work. So that, again, will take place this afternoon, and I will have the board informed about that as soon as I have some.
What's the status of the environmental work?
The environmental work, I don't have that in front of me. I expect to have what's considered an updated project description, which provides then the basis for the draft EIR. The most recent update I had on that was yesterday, and Mr. Wood estimated that that project description would be completed the next day or two, and then a draft environmental impact report for district review would be available within 2 weeks. I believe that's the correct schedule.
Have you had a chance to speak to anyone at Caltrans?
Actually, in discussing with the Cannon Associates, I believe they have had some more recent contacts with Caltrans, and they were optimistic about those. I expect to have an update on that this afternoon. I left a message with the Council of Governments in Santa Barbara yesterday in hopes that we'd make a contact there and ensure that we're at the table with any discussions, transportation-type discussions that have to do with the 101 bridge, which I think is one of our top options for running the pipeline. So doing our best to keep on top of these issues as they evolve. I did attach an allocation summary, and again, unless there are questions on that, I won't go over that. I think on the allocation, though, given the recent decision by the Board of Supervisors that staff would recommend that we bring that allocation ordinance back to the board for consideration and revising to align then with the county's recent change in their county growth cap. Again, our allocation ordinance is directly linked to the 2.3%, I think it is, current growth cap. Heads are shaking both directions, so I want to make
it's currently linked to the 2.3. What you're saying is you want to link it to the 1.8.
Right, there's a proposed change. I believe the ordinance has been introduced and will be adopted in the future by the County Board of Supervisors, and then we'll want to then respond to that by changing our allocation ordinance accordingly. And staff spent some more time thinking over our allocation ordinance and one other change that I need to work up a bit more completely, but I brought to the board's attention, is that we currently have a water certification requirement in this ordinance. And I think my recommendation or my thought process here is that we maintain the water certification requirement, and that is where a designer will certify that a project is designed to meet our very conservative water consumption goals, depending on the category. Again, we talked about this earlier, but multifamily, residential, and depending on lot size, these types of things. So it's a design goal certification, if you will. However, we also use those numbers, those allocation or those conservation goals as then our allocation number. So if we say, we're saying to a developer, if you're going to have a single family home on greater than 10,000 square foot piece of property, your goal for water use on that, including landscape, is 0.55 acre feet. And then we turn around and we say, okay, once the board of directors approves that single family residence, then off our allocation list, we pull off 0.55 acre feet. And I like the certification aspect of it. We're trying to achieve a conservation goal. But again, for allocation, I think we need to be a bit more conservative, and it would be more appropriate to look at what the district's consumption actually is by these different categories currently and say, well, we're going to shoot for the conservation goal, but we're going to allocate according to our current reality. And those numbers would be higher. Right. So we'd allocate. It's similar to what we did with the applicant earlier on the agenda today, where we allocated higher than we expect them to use, but we want to be conservative in that allocation. And so that's a change that I'm going to work up a bit more, and if there's any early direction here from the board, I welcome it. But again, we can bring this back to the board. I'm looking at our calendar going forward. June 8th is going to be a very busy meeting with a number of end-of-year financial items, if you will, and so possibly that second meeting in June or the first meeting in July, our first meeting next fiscal year, is a target for being back with the allocation ordinance.
You might want to reconsider that, because the county's final vote on it isn't until July. So if you want to reallocate based on something you think they're going to pass, they probably will, but they also aren't guaranteed
no
to
guarantee.
Do it.
Okay, Mr. Wynn.
No, I'm sorry. They did approve it yesterday. In fact, the specific question was asked, is this a tentative vote? And legal ruling said, no, we are setting it today. They came
back.
Right. However, as you think on that, I would encourage you to remember a couple of other things. Our water permitting ordinance has no exceptions. Everybody has an allocation number someplace if they're going to come in. The counties has tremendous numbers of exceptions, to the point that they actually permitted 7.93% increase last year, giving pipelines and low-income housing and a whole range of other things that were accepted. So our 2.3 is a real cap compared to a significant contribution, but not the whole story on their part. For us to take the real cap down to 1.8 would have far greater impact than the decision they made yesterday. So you may want to think about whether that really makes sense. The other thing is, I do encourage you to go ahead with looking at real use versus notional use as a basis. I think that's very powerful. But I would also encourage you not to do it until the commercial subcommittee it comes back with some recommendations as far as to whether or not we're going to set allocation numbers for commercial growth or not. I think all of those need to be part of the final packages you put together.
I'd like to open this item up. Mr. LeBrun.
Mid-train here, I do have a couple other items to make sure I discuss. I have transmitted to the board a recent
no public comment.
a recent citation we received from Department of Health Services, and I want to ensure the board that I forwarded a memo to the board under separate cover, and I want to ensure the board that the staff is taking actions to prevent future citations and responding to this citation promptly. There is a requirement for a public notice via newspaper, which will be meeting that requirement within the next 7 days, and then a requirement for direct mailing. That is a 45-day window on that, and given the recent number of direct mailings associated with our rate increases, it was thought, and that includes solid waste, of course, which goes out next week, I believe. It's thought that we best wait and give our customers a little time here. We've got 45 days, and so we'll be sending that public notice directly, and of course in compliance with the 45-day window, but we won't be initiating that immediately. We didn't want that to come on top of our solid waste notice, which will go out next week and be lost in the shuffle there, if you will. I wanted to give a couple stats off our website. We'll see some significant additional development of that website as we do bring on staff that we foresee having on early next fiscal year. But what we're seeing already is that we're seeing as many as in April. These are statistics from April. Average 36 sessions a day. That would be 36 times folks came to the site. And of those sessions, average 2.7 or almost 3 pages, so 3 different pages of our website being gone through, and 8 megabytes of downloads. So it's working out already to be something of a resource to our community. Along this line, I think, as we talked about earlier, continuing to query our community in regards to our board meeting schedules and days or evenings and recording, that this might be a location where we could always have, we welcome your inputs. What are your thoughts on these? Anytime, and continue kind of a continuous track there, or do future surveys through our website as we further develop that. It'll become a more and more of a tool for public outreach. I look forward to that. Finally, I want to bring your attention to a letter we received recently, and I have that in your package, May 20th letter from a customer requesting relief to a water bill. This was received, of course, after the preparation of this agenda. I had received the request to forward this to the board of directors, so I have. Currently, the district's policy is simply that water that is metered through your meter, you are responsible to pay for. And I think that's understood policy. It's very important that a customer be responsible for the maintenance of their water system, and that is after the meter, it is their system. And we certainly would not want to encourage granting relief to high water bills simply because of a customer inattention to their water system or inattention to the use of their water. That said, this customer reflects that in other districts there are other policies that would include a one-time forgiveness, struck my interest. I of course have reviewed our district policy, and we've been very hard and fast on this over the years that all customers will pay. We offer a payment plan that will help folks handle the cost of this. In this letter, we're talking about a customer who has a nearly $1,000 water bill. Their typical water bill for this period, and we have looked at that and verified that, is more on the order of $40. So it's a very significant hit to these folks. In any event, what I found that in other districts, I've contacted one district at this point, and at that district, general manager has some discretion and makes consideration of a number of factors, and once in a customer's lifetime with the district, will grant some level of relief on something that is extreme. And actually, in that district, he outlined a number of conditions, which this letter happens to represent or meet a number of those conditions. That said, what I'd like is to have the director's direction to query a few other districts in our area, get some more input on this, consider it further, and I'll come back to the board with my recommendations specific to this request and to our approach to this type of request.
What did they indicate was the cause of this problem?
A leak that was unbeknownst to them. Again, that this represents some, I don't have my notes in front of me, but something on the order of 300,000 gallons of water, if I'm not mistaken, that went through this meter during the month. These folks live on an acre parcel. I've not been out to the site, but based on their water use history, they use very little water, so I'm assuming that it's a fairly natural landscape on this acre, and they indicated that this leak took place outside their normal area that they see, and in fact a neighbor brought it to their attention.
There was a similar situation at Black Lake last year, and the board denied any relief.
Right, and that is long been the stance of this board. So,
well, when you come back with your recommendation, maybe you can get a legal opinion too. It seems to me that what you're asking is the rest of the district to pick up the tab for this.
That's what that would amount to. Any relief that you grant to an individual customer necessarily means that you're
spreading the cost.
You're spreading that cost to all other customers. And
I wish I had known that when we had that leak at Napomo Native Garden. It was $1,200 and some bucks.
and the district did not grant relief, I'm sure.
We didn't ask for it either. We just paid it.
And that's again, I've only spoke with one district.
I'm trying to interject a little humor here, Mr. LeBrun.
Okay.
The Native Garden.
I would have had to recuse myself from that vote, by the way.
Why?
Because I'm the president of Napomo Native Garden.
The Native Garden should get along without any meter.
Well, we have a wetland area that requires watering. That runs $200 every 2 months.
I know that.
So we're one of your good customers.
And anyway, I think the approach you're taking is very sensible.
Yeah.
Find out if there's precedent. Talk it over with legal counsel in terms of what there is. Certainly, people who've been very frugal and then an oak tree growing on their property breaks a pipe unknown to them underground. Yeah. Doesn't constitute willful negligence. I mean, it's so sandy that it's easy to believe the water went straight down and didn't show on the surface. So
you wouldn't even see it.
Find out where we are.
All right.
I would also recommend that if there's any late fees associated with non-payment, that they be waived at this point in time until the matter is resolved.
Yes.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on the manager's report at this time? I'd be happy to answer those.
I had a question briefly. I looked at the report on the Hermerich well.
Yes.
And I understand that's Mr. Metz is who's going to bet that. I didn't see the heading at the top of the page on the, what is that, the fourth page of Section F. I'm assuming this also came from Clayton Associates and not from Mr. Metz? Is that
right? This report that you have in front of you, this technical memorandum, was done by Clayton Associates and used to set the table, if you will, to forward the data to Mr. Metz with Pacific Geoscience.
The specific question that a number of us raised, and I don't see it addressed in their report, was is there any reasonable procedure by which we should have found out when this first test hole was drilled that this water was going to be saline to the point that it would kill every living thing that touched it? Did we actually have to case a well 1,500 feet deep before we found out that it was incredibly salty? And because we will drill other wells at other times, I mean, I think that this is, whether we were defective in our RFP, I think, you know, this cost us, that one decision cost us over $100,000. So I would like to know the answer to that. And I think every person I've talked to, now these are people who do shallow wells, farmers out here that do say 400 to 600 feet, they're laughing at us. They're saying, my goodness, you guys spend an unbelievable amount of money, and anybody knows you test the water that comes out of your test hole before you start, you know, reaming it out to a larger size and casing it. And I'd like to have some definitive answer on that.
As I recall, a justification for digging it deeper was the estimated potential volume of water. They didn't dwell on the quality. They dwelled upon the potential yield.
I'm not talking about the depth so much as I am whether we should have seen this before we cased it. And I'm not trying to scapegoat here. I just want to make sure that we know what we're doing when we go out and do this again.
Okay. Understood.
Yeah. Okay. Then that concludes manager's report, and we'll move on to committee reports. The annexation committee met, I think.
The annexation committee did meet. I would prefer that either Mr. Eby or Mr. LeBrun made the report, because we started 30 minutes late, and unfortunately that meant I had to leave before the meeting was over. And I think you went for another hour at least, so I would rather that they made a report.
Okay. That's Mr. Eby or Mr. LeBrun?
Okay, well, my recollection of the meeting, and it's already been challenged today, was that we just presented the applicants our procedures, our annexation procedures. We gave them a process flowchart on how to annex according to the NCSD. We made sure that they had the LAFCO requirements understood, even gave them written copies of that. The general manager made up a list of all of the anticipated fees that one would experience in an annexation. We talked about supplemental water and how the we've already got our 3,000 acre feet of supplemental water allocated potentially, so any annexation would come outside of that allocation, and we would need to know very soon how much water annexations would need if they were to jump onto the supplemental water purchase that we're going to be doing. The applicant showed us several notional layouts of their property. We asked a bunch of questions. They answered them. I don't remember saying that we expressed an opinion that we wanted to annex them. We showed them that there were what the limitations would be in annexation, what the milestones they had to pass, but I don't remember making any recommendation or saying that it was the sense of the NCSD that we wanted to annex them. I don't think it's appropriate yet to express that sort of sentiment. I think we need to go a lot farther before we take a position. To me it was an informational meeting. We exchanged information, and I thought we went away, both sides went away more informed than we went into it.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Eby. Don't think any other committee met.
I don't mean to totally disagree with Mr. Eby, but I think it was a reasonable assumption for the developer to believe that since this was in our sphere of influence, and because since we were giving them sort of a roadmap, if you will, how they would have to travel to go from here to there, that they would have come away with the understanding that annexation was in our benefit and theirs. We certainly at no point told them no, this would be harmful. But I do agree with Mr. Eby that the final decision, of course, has to be made by this entire board, and the committees are not empowered to sort of give those sorts of decisions to the people I meet with. So I would spin it a little differently, but for them to come away, I don't think they were delusional.
No.
In hearing what they heard, but I don't even think they're saying that they got a final approval for annexation. I think we're actually understanding each other.
No, pretty well. And my feeling also is that they were presented information with pros and cons by which they can now look at it and determine, is there a is there a greater benefit to annex than not to annex? And so be it. So thank you very much, Mr. Wendt-Eby. Director comments?
I would also say the other committee was scheduled to meet last Friday for conservation.
Conservation.
And we were not able to meet, unfortunately. But I feel very strongly this is something we need to move ahead with quickly.
I agree with you, Mr. Wendt. So then, director comments. Thank you, Mr. Trotter. That shortens it. Mr. Eby?
I don't have any today.
Not today.
Holy smokes. I have a few. Okay. The this afternoon here at 2 p.m., the Trails Committee will be meeting with County Parks, and we will be verifying that the appropriate trails are on the trail on the County Park Master Plan for the South County Plan area. The West Tef Corridor Design Plan Public Review Draft will be, and that will be, there's a meeting, there's a public meeting Thursday evening, 26th, here at NCSD, 6:30. On May 17th, the Kenyatta Specific Plan Subcommittee of the NCAC met again with RRM Design and the developer community, and we looked at the results of our first workshop, and they had a lot of stuff up there, but they boiled it down to these three layouts, so to speak, and of course the topic was brought up about the homes, 650 plus and minus whatever number, and we discussed each layout and what we felt was a strong point, and somehow, you know, maybe they'll gel the best of each layout into a final, like, ultimate layout. But I guess before that, they'll be going before the CACHO, I believe, wants to have a meeting and go over this stuff too. And then there'll be like a public unveiling, so to speak, a public workshop. Here's your tails for the donkey, you know, go pin them where you think they should be on this kind of a thing. What's our strong points and weak points? I did mention that I talked to Pat Beck before she went on vacation. I will call her back after she comes back with regards to moving ahead with the board's recommended steps following the resource management resource capacity study level of severity. At this time, I want to appoint the commercial allocation committee's makeup. Mr. Wynn will chair, and Mr. Trotter will work in concert with Mr. Wynn.
Try to work in concert with Mr. Wynn.
And I did this because of their previous track record on the residential allocation committee, in they made it happen in an expeditious manner, and I appreciate their abilities to work together, gather the data, boil it down, and come up with a product that is usually almost ready to put the icing on.
It's flawless.
Actually, it was close to flawless. So that's the, and that's all I have. So at this time,
conservation.
Well, that was, you mentioned about. Okay, I'm going to request on our June 8th agenda that we reappoint the membership of the conservation committee. That'll be an item that will happen, mainly because of other factors. One of the members just is not able to actively participate in that. And since it was a board action to create it, and even though I can appoint the members, I feel we need a board action to, I don't want to say dissolve it and redo it, but just change the makeup. So with that said, item number I, Mr. Seitz.
Yes, we have
closed session announcement.
We have three items on the closed session. One is conference with legal counsel. All of these under pending litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. We have the Santa Maria groundwater adjudication case. The second case is the Maria Vista versus the Palma Community Service District. And the third one is our litigation against the county regarding environmental impact report for substation.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. At this time, I would like to open it up to public comment on closed session items.
Good morning. My name is John Fricks. I represent Maria Vista Estates. Mr. Benham and Mr. Pender. Mr. Pender drove up from Los Angeles to be here so that when you go into closed session, you consider the proposal that we provided. Mr. Seitz and I were in court earlier, I guess a little over a week ago, and the judge made comments about he hoped that the parties work together to try to resolve this litigation. I believe that Mr. Seitz took those comments to heart. We have had several discussions since then. I believe that we've taken that to heart. I think there's always give and take. The proposal that we provided by letter dated May 23rd should be something I think should be seriously considered by the board in closed session. As indicated at the bottom of that letter, I promised to be here with my clients to answer any questions the board may have before going into closed session. I understand that that's not the usual process, but we wanted to provide you with the opportunity to ask any questions before going into closed session.
Thank you very much. Any other comment on closed session items? Public comment. Seeing none, then we will adjourn to closed session. Thank you very much, one and all, for coming, and you know, if you want to stay.
Did adjourn to closed session, discussed three items on the agenda at approximately 12:15. They returned to open session at approximately 1:15, where the attorney announced that the board heard an update on all three items listed on the agenda, but the board took no official action.